Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right, thank you so much for joining us today. Our show is Mental Disorders and Autism, the Shocking Truth Revealed. According to the National Institute of Mental Health in 2012, an estimated 9.6 million adults suffered with serious mental illness. In addition, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey estimates that approximately 13% of children ages 8 to 15 have a diagnosable mental disorder. In reality, millions of people are suffering from mood disorders, ADHD, depression, anxiety, plus a wide variety of health issues, including autism. What's causing all this pain and suffering? As usual, the answer to this question is painfully in plain sight. And today, I'll talk to a mental health expert with over 40 years of psychiatric experience who will blow the lid off this very well-kept secret about the poisoning of Americans and people around the world within our food supply. Before you go out and take toxic psychiatric drugs with the hope of eliminating mental health problems, I urge you to listen carefully to this program. And as usual, if you know anyone taking anti-anxiety or mood-altering medications, please share this information with them. It could very well save their life. But before we get started with our guests, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And now, let me introduce our special guest, Dr. Ralph Walton. Dr. Walton, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Alan. It's good to be with you.
Dr. Walton, I know many people listening to this program may not be too familiar with your background, so I'd like to start with just talking a little bit about your career, please.
Okay, I'll be glad to, Jonathan. I'm a physician. I began my career as a faculty member at the University of Rochester School of Medicine. I was there for 3 years. Then I went into a private practice and moved to the southwestern area of New York State, where I was commissioner of mental health in Chautauqua County for 12 years and director of the Jamestown General Hospital's psychiatric department. When that hospital closed, I left for Ohio and became a faculty member at Northeastern Ohio University's College of Medicine. I was professor there and ultimately chairman of the medical school's department of psychiatry. Was there in Ohio at NeoUCOM for 17 years and then semi-retired, came back to this area where I practice now on a part-time basis doing primarily telepsychiatry. In other words, I see patients on the screen, I stay here in my office, and it's a nice way to semi-retire.
Absolutely. And Dr. Walton, we've done a lot of shows touching on mental health issues, obviously physical concerns as well. It's not really a side note because I think it'll lead into what your discoveries have been of late, you know, the last 10, 20 years. But I'm just curious. I want to hear what your feedback is. In your professional career in psychiatry, you know, you're running these departments, you're seeing these people obviously with mental health issues. Was there a big discussion about, you know, what they're eating or drinking might be causing some of their mental, emotional disorders?
No, unfortunately not, Jonathan. You know, when I was in medical school, I think we had one morning devoted to nutrition. We had virtually no training in medical school in nutrition. And the longer I practice medicine, the more I'm convinced that what we eat plays a very, very powerful role in our health and in our mental health.
You know, I say this to you because, or I ask you this kind of a question because so many people new to this kind of program would say, you know, come on, We're talking about how food is connected to certain serious mental or physical problems. It's very hard for a lot of people to believe that that's true, but time and again, I mean, it literally raises the hair on my skin when I realize that another person like you has said through all of your medical training that you never learned much about nutrition. And this is really the heart of the matter. When people say, you know, come on, why do you talk about these things? If it was really so, we would hear about this all over in the mainstream news. If I went to my doctor's office, my doctor would be talking to me about this all the time. And I say this respectfully, those people have no idea how bad it is out there in terms of the medical training that young medical students are getting. I really say it like feeling bad for all those people out there who have really wonderful intentions, those young people, you know, going into debt for $100,000, $200,000. They want to go help somebody, but they're only being given drug therapies, if you will, for every single condition out there. You know, what are your thoughts on this, Dr. Walton?
Well, my thoughts are that clearly food can be viewed as a medicine, is more powerful than many medications. Now, again, I heard your comments earlier, and I disagree a little bit, Jonathan, with what you say. We certainly still need medications, and there are mental illnesses that do require psychotropic medications. You know,
sure.
Somebody who is bipolar may well need to be on lithium, etc. But clearly, nutrition is a very, very powerful and underappreciated factor in our health, both psychiatric health and physical health.
So in leading up to what we were talking about earlier, now a lot of people may be easily wondering, all right, so what is going on here? What could possibly be causing so many troubles, especially in those vulnerable populations like children? And I'm sure you have plenty to say also about senior citizens, but, you know, we're obviously especially concerned about the kids out there, our future generations. What are we doing to humanity? I'd like to ask you how you first got involved with this aspartame issue, and why did you get so involved in it?
Well, it really began with the experience of one of my patients. Was back in the early and mid-1980s. I had been taking care of a woman with a recurrent severe depression. I first met her when I was in Rochester, actually, when I was on the faculty of the University of Rochester Medical School. This was a woman who had a very severe depressive disorder. I was convinced it was partially genetic. She had a strong family history of both bipolar illness and depressions. She was severely depressed, and she's somebody who I think did need a medication. She was on an old medication called imipramine, which was a miracle drug for this woman. And she did very, very well for, I think, about 12 years or so. She actually followed me. When I moved from Rochester to southwestern New York, she continued to see me. She would come every few months or so. And basically, it was just to have some brief discussions about the stresses she was facing, but primarily to renew the antidepressant that she was taking that was effective for her. Then all of a sudden, she had this woman who had been doing very well, was quite stable for many years, suddenly had a grand mal seizure, an epileptic seizure. She was then in her 50s. Epilepsy typically does not start in the 50s. She had a CAT scan done, and it showed that there was no stroke. This woman had no acute vascular event causing her sudden seizures. So I was at a loss, and so was her internist, to explain the sudden onset of severe seizures. Then after the seizures, she suddenly became manic. This is a woman who was always just had recurrent depressions that were controlled well with an antidepressant. She suddenly was manic. That is, she was talking nonstop. She wasn't sleeping. She was grandiose. Her judgment was altered. And typically, bipolar disorder doesn't have its onset in the 50s. I was searching for an explanation for what happened to my patient, and I had to do some detective work. The only thing that was different in her life was that she decided she was a little bit too heavy, and she was going to switch from her regular diet, regular colas, to the newly introduced diet colas. And she suddenly, and she took Crystal Light, actually. She was drinking diet colas and also adding Crystal Light instead of sugar. So she was getting an awful lot of this new sweetener called aspartame. And I wondered whether this could cause what happened to her. It made sense to me on a neurochemical level. It's a rather long process. I won't go into all of that now, Jonathan, but it made sense from the chemistry of aspartame that this substance, if she took it in a large quantity, would lower her seizure threshold, making it more likely for her to have a seizure, and it would also trigger a manic episode. Again, the chemistry is rather complicated. I won't go into that now, but it made sense on a chemical level that aspartame caused this woman's seizure and her manic episode. I wrote that up as a paper. It was published in Psychosomatics, and that was the beginning of my involvement with aspartame. That was a single case report, and it did get quite a bit of attention. Over the years, people criticized my beliefs that aspartame was so dangerous because this was only a single case report, and I knew that I would have to do a larger study, and we did that in 1993.
Yeah, I would very much like to go right into that now. Before we get there, though, I want to make it very clear that we've had an incredible response over the last podcast that we did. Now, if you're listening to this program and you're at the gym, you're in the car, you know, you've downloaded this episode, please, when you get a chance, go to naturalhealth365.com. Just click the podcast link and you will see a podcast titled Aspartame Poisoning. It's with my good friend, Dr. Betty Martini. You will not believe the information that is in that program. If you're interested in understanding more about how aspartame, artificial sweeteners, can affect your health. So let's get right to it, Dr. Walton. I'd like you to talk about this double-blind study that was published in 1993, what you just talked about aspartame, and tell us about some of these surprising results. I mean, what were you surprised about?
I was surprised by the severity of the adverse reactions. You know, I expected that the consequences to patients and to the control individuals in the study would be minimal. You know, the ethics of the situation would not certainly have allowed me to do a study where I expected considerable harm. I thought that there would be some subtle changes. The FDA at the time said that 50 milligrams of aspartame per kilogram per day was safe. So I decided to stay below that. I certainly didn't want to harm the subjects in the study. I thought there might be some headaches, some subtle mood changes, etc. So we gave our subjects and the control individuals 30 milligrams of aspartame per kilogram per day, lower than the 50 milligrams that they said was the upper limit. So I expected only, as I said, subtle changes. But what we encountered was very severe adverse effects. Many individuals felt that they had been poisoned. The administrator of our psychiatric unit was a PhD psychologist, and he agreed to be a guinea pig in this study. He was a healthy man, no known medical problems. He suddenly had an intraocular bleed, that is, he had a bleeding episode in one eye. He had to be life-flighted to Cleveland, and he lost the vision in one eye. We had a nurse who was a subject in the study, who also had bleeding within one eye. And we assume that this was related to the fact that methanol is one of the byproducts of the metabolism of aspartame. Aspartame is what's called a methyl ester of a dipeptide. And the methyl ester component is metabolized by the body into very small amounts of methanol. Methanol, or wood alcohol, is highly toxic and can cause severe eye damage. And as I said, we had two individuals within our study who had significant eye problems. The adverse effects on our subjects in this study were so severe that the IRB, that's the Institutional Review Board, whenever you do studies on human subjects, you have to have supervision by an IRB. The IRB actually stopped the study. I thought that would be the end of it, but we had enough statistically significant information that the study was still published, but we didn't have the number of individuals that we had initially wanted. And again, because the study had to be stopped due to the severity of the adverse reactions.
It's absolutely incredible. People listen to this. It's like, how on earth did you know that this happened to these people because of the aspartame? What is it you would tell somebody out there who's skeptical about listening to this kind of information? I mean, perhaps there's nothing we can say, Dr. Walton, but I'm just curious, how would you answer that sort of, you know, doubt in people's minds? How do you know that there's a connection, a correlation? That's it?
Yes, and there's not just my work, but there's an increasing body of research now pointing out the damaging effect of aspartame. There are now literally hundreds of studies showing that this is a very, very toxic product. There are also hundreds of studies, even more studies, pointing out the safety of aspartame. But if you look at where the funding for those studies claiming that it is safe comes from, you'll see that all of these studies that claim that aspartame is perfectly safe were funded either directly or indirectly by the aspartame industry, by the diet soda industry, the artificial sweetener industry. It's incredible. Every single one of them claiming safety was funded by the industry, and whenever you have an independently funded study, one that has no linkage to the aspartame industry, you will find that the conclusion is that aspartame has very, very significant toxic effects.
It is amazing information. And a lot of people out there would say also, and I think they'll be shocked if they did their own investigating on this. I'd like you to back me up and see if this is accurate or not. But a lot of people out there would think, you know, again, come on. Aspartame, it's in over 6,000 products. It's artificial sweeteners. We got Sweet and Low out there. We got Equal. We got all these things. It's being given to elderly people in assisted living and nursing homes and senior citizen care centers. I mean, it makes me crazy every time I see parents in the supermarkets buying these artificially sweetened products in family size packages, you know, for their children. I mean, you know, you just want to walk up to all of them and shake them. But a lot of them would just say, you know, it's out on the market. The FDA approved it. But if you were to tell them that the actual FDA scientists way back at the beginning were giving huge warnings about how aspartame actually looked like it induced cancer, I think most people would think that I am lying. Dr. Walton, what would you say to that?
Yes, you're exactly correct, Jonathan. We know that the early studies by Searle, by the scientists employed by the manufacturer of aspartame, did identify significant incidence of certain brain tumors. I mean, the whole story of the approval of aspartame is extremely sordid. It's a long story. You probably don't want to go into all of it on your show now, but it's really a sordid mess. And there were scientists at the FDA and at Searle who clearly understood the toxic nature of aspartame, but there was so much money involved. And Donald Rumsfeld was the CEO of Searle at the time, and he was able to call in his political markers and get the substance approved despite the knowledge of the scientists at both the FDA and Searle about the toxicity of this product.
Dr. Walton, I want to get into what you put together for Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes in 1996. This is very interesting stuff, and I'd love for you to tell me what you actually told the House of Commons in London and the European Food Safety Authority in Italy. This is going to be really interesting information, but before we get there, I would like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market, for making this show possible. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. So, Dr. Walton, let's just get right to it. Talk about the material that you put together for Mike Wallace demonstrating industry influence on research that was aired on 60 Minutes in 1996.
When I was interviewed by Mike Wallace, Mike said, "Dr. Walton, how is it that you claim that aspartame is such a toxic substance, yet there are hundreds of studies in the literature attesting to the safety of this product?" And I responded that he really needed to look at the funding sources. And I had put together then a chart that was aired on the 60-minute episode in which I looked at every single study that was independent and every study that was linked to industry. All of the industry-funded studies said that it was safe, and essentially all of the independent studies identified a problem. I think it was like 95, 96% of independently funded studies identified one or more problems. There are very few that were supposedly independent that did not identify a problem were actually funded by the FDA. So all really independent studies, 100% of, if you consider really totally independent, they all said that this substance was toxic.
I'm surprised. I mean, even now it seems so hard to find this kind of research. I mean, they aired this on television. Isn't it incredible? I mean, you don't see anything like this on TV now, do you?
No, you don't. You don't. I mean, this industry is very powerful. They have an incredible amount of money. I mean, just think, compare this, for example, to the cigarette industry. You know, there are many different manufacturers of cigarettes. For many years, there was basically a monopoly on the artificial sweetener market. It's not the case now, but just about every artificially sweetened product was linked to aspartame, which was made by First Searle and Monsanto and so forth. So you had basically one company profiting from all of the diet industry, the diet colas throughout the world. So the amounts of money involved were absolutely phenomenal here. But I tried to also impart to the House of Commons in England. Roger Williams, an MP from Wales, asked me to help him put together a bill which he introduced into the House of Commons. And he and I spoke about this, and it was introduced. It almost passed. It did not pass because obviously the industry also put on a lot of pressure on the members of Parliament. But we had, I've forgotten what the actual vote was, but we had a significant number of people who did vote for the bill. Again, more people voted against it. And that was in response to the pressure from the aspartame industry at the time. And I also spoke on the same topic before the European Food Safety Authority in Parma and tried to make the same point to that group. But again, I believe that there were significant ties to the aspartame industry.
So just as a side note, Dr. Walton, I mean, you've been doing this now for a long time and you clearly see a connection, but I'm still just curious. With all the people, we're talking about mental health issues in particular today. People are struggling with not feeling well, agitated, depressed, anxious, having trouble sleeping. I mean, a lot of people out there are going to say, well, those people probably are just eating poorly. But just as on a clinical perspective, how many would you say, percentage-wise, are really consuming artificially sweetened foods? Do you see it pervasive with all the patients that you've seen over the years?
Yeah, over the years, a very substantial proportion of my practice, people who were taking in artificial sweeteners. You know, I think that a physician, any physician, regardless of specialty, needs to take a careful dietary history. And before intervening with a medication, get that patient to have a better diet. Granted, some people will still need to be on an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety agent. I don't believe that all mental health or physical problems can be addressed by diet, but many can, and it's a significant percentage. You know, when I would see, for example, a patient with panic disorder, I would first look at what the diet was, and modifying the diet in many, many cases obviates the need for a medication. I would bet that probably half of the patients would come to me with that problem, say panic attacks. If we just cut back on caffeine, eliminated artificial sweeteners, probably half of those people would have their symptoms disappear. Another half might still need another form of treatment, including a medication. So again, I'm a mainstream practitioner in many ways, and I do use psychotropic meds. But many, many people who presented in my practice will benefit primarily from a change in their diet, elimination of artificial sweeteners, etc.
How receptive are the psychiatrists out there? I mean, I don't know if this is a fair question to ask you. Have you, over the years, done presentations in front of conventionally trained psychiatrists? I mean, it just, in my, you know, simple view of the world, it seems like so many physicians out there really need to come on board and, like you say, you know, make food a part of the discussion to enhance the quality of lives of their patients. I mean, this is something that just needs to be, you know, going on a lot more, don't you think?
Well, much more, yes. There are changes that are occurring. You know, when I watch some of the TV doctors now, I do see an increasing focus on diet. For example, if you watch Dr. Oz or watch the doctors, you will see them talking a lot more about diet today than they did a few years ago. And I'm getting more receptivity from my colleagues. Initially, when I spoke about these issues to various physicians groups, there was a great deal of skepticism about this. But I'm getting much more acceptance today, and people are beginning to look more at diet. Again, not enough, but I think there are changes afoot here.
I would like to thank one more time our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, you can visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. Dr. Walton, to finish out this program, I would like you to talk about this study that you're doing with Woodrow Monti. Please talk about, first, of course, who is Woodrow Monti, and talk about this connection. You know, what is it that you're looking at with this connection between diet and autism?
Woodrow Monti is one of the world's experts in methanol metabolism. He was a professor of biochemistry, professor of food science for many years at Arizona State University. He's now in New Zealand. He has a laboratory there. And he and I, over the years, have been convinced that aspartame is a significant factor in many, many so-called, what he calls diseases of civilization, in Alzheimer's, in diabetes, and in autism. There's been a tremendous increase in the prevalence of autism, going back probably to the mid-1980s. Again, there's more awareness, so there's some controversy as to whether there's enhanced diagnostic acumen, but there clearly has been a real increase in the prevalence of autism, going back to about the time of the introduction of aspartame. If you look at a graph, and Woodrow Monti has this graph in his book, a book entitled While Science Sleeps, a Sweetener Kills, and he has a graph showing the increasing use of aspartame, of artificial sweeteners, and superimposing that on the graph of the changing prevalence of autism. They track each other very, very closely. He and I believe that one of the many factors involved in producing autistic children is the diet of the mother. And we're looking at together now, we have a questionnaire out in the internet and that I gave to the patients in my practice over the last several years. That questionnaire asks women about their diet during pregnancy, and we're trying to look at, to compare the prevalence of autism in women who had significant intakes of aspartame during their pregnancy. We believe that there is a relationship, and that clearly autism has many, many factors producing it, but we believe that one major factor in the increasing prevalence of autism is the use of artificial sweeteners.
And I want to take a moment to thank everybody out there. Such huge support over our last podcast, Aspartame Poisoning. We had a link on that podcast, and we will have a link as well on the page for this podcast. Again, if you're not on naturalhealth365.com, when you get a chance, just go to the podcast link, click it. You can open up this podcast on the page or the aspartame poisoning, and you will see a link that will enable you to fill out that form. And again, it's for women, right, Dr. Walton, that have given birth from 1984 to today. Is that correct?
Right. That's correct.
And so, you know, I want to thank everybody for filling this out. I mean, this is a real survey that's going to Dr. Walton. This is really going to people who know about statistics. They're really doing great work in studying and looking at this connection. This is the kind of stuff that we need to encourage more. It's independent. It's obviously not funded by Monsanto or Big Pharma or anything. So, you know, it's free to be able to really see what the scientific results are. So I wanted to thank everybody for filling it out, for showing their support. And Dr. Walton, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're most welcome, Jonathan. Appreciated the opportunity.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.